Oranges, honey, olive oil, we've got it all.
Tenemos enchufes. Hello and welcome to another wonderful episode of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. I'm Craig.
Hello, I'm Reza.
Hi, Reza.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. This is episode 96 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig, and today we're talking about nature and the environment. If you are a new listener to this award-winning podcast, welcome. With over 40 years of teaching experience between Reza and I, we'll help you improve your English and help you take it to the next level. So, nature and the environment. But before we speak about that, Reza, I think we've got something to say about Patreon.
Yes, we'd just like to remind you all about the Patreon system. If you like, you could make a small donation to us. You could sponsor us. If you go to www.patreon.com/Inglés podcast. We already have some sponsors and we'd like to thank them. They are Juan Leva Galera, Daniel Contreras Aladro, Arlem Lara.
I think that's Lara Arlem. I think she put her surname before her first name. So I'm pretty sure that's Lara.
Apologies, Lara, if that's the case. Armando Agudelo, Sara Jarabo, Manuel Tarazona, and Ivy Envy. Corey Finneran.
My good friend Corey, Ivy Envy, the baseball podcast. I'm sure Corey doesn't listen to the show, but he's very kindly sponsored us from the beginning to help us get our show notes transcribed. So
thanks to all you guys. And if anyone else would like, you could join them by becoming a space sponsor of a sponsor on the Patreon system. So Patreon, www.patreon.com/Inglés podcast. And the reason we're doing it is because, like many of you, we would like to have very detailed show notes. We would like to transcribe every single word, but it takes a long time and we haven't got time. But if we get money from the Patreon system, from your donations, we'll pay someone to do it. That is the objective of the Patreon sponsorship.
And we've calculated that we need approximately $100 per month to do this. If there are four episodes, about $25 per episode. And at the moment, we're nearly at $10. So still a way to go, but we're hoping to increase that over the coming months.
By the way, believe us, it does take a long time to describe what you hear. I tell you what, if you don't believe me, listen to something even in Spanish, if you like, in your own language. Listen to something which lasts 40 minutes. You listen to it and try to write down every single word. See how long it takes you. In Spanish, try it. And imagine if you did that in a foreign language, yeah? It takes a long time, and we haven't got that time. We're sorry.
If you remember back in episode 91 with our friend Mike Harding, we spoke about the past perfect and using narrative tenses to tell a story and using the past perfect as a pre-past, prepasado, to tell about something that happened before a time in the past. Well, we asked you to send in your stories, and we have a story from Jose from Alicante, who speaks about a vampire. Here's Jose's story. Now listen to the past perfect use in Jose's story.
Hello, Craig Reza. This is Jose from Alicante. And I just wanted to leave a message to tell you a story regarding the use of the past perfect. But anyway, the story is all about how I turned into a vampire. Well, I remember it all happened 2 years ago when I was visiting the zoo with my wife and my two kids. We were there visiting the dangerous species, you know, spiders, snakes, and bats. And I was there in, you know, in a room which was almost in the dark, and I was completely alone because my wife and my two kids had gone to the bathroom before. And out of the blue, a bat appeared flying around me and bit me in the neck. You know, I had seen some movies about vampires, but I didn't believe it at all, so I didn't give it any importance. So we went back home, we went to sleep, but you know, that night I had a terrible nightmare and I didn't sleep very well. And the next morning when I woke up, I realized that my canines had grown and that I was thirsty for blood. And that's my story. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
What did you think, Reza?
Jose, that is a brilliant story, and it was perfectly told.
Wasn't it well done? Fantastic.
Really well done.
Lots of past perfect in there.
Not only past perfect, but a lovely use of past tenses. You used the past perfect correctly and the past simple, and you mixed it with the past continuous. Fantastic. Well done.
And some lovely expressions like, I didn't give it any importance. It was very nice. Mm-hmm. And bloodthirsty vampires. Excellent. Well done.
Jose, you sound like a really nice guy, but, you know, voices can be misleading. So other listeners, should you ever visit Alicante and you come across Jose, although he has a lovely voice, do be careful because he is a vampire.
Don't go to the zoo. If you see Jose in the zoo, keep away from him, especially in Alicante Zoo. Vocabulary. Today we're speaking about nature and the environment, words connected with nature and our environment. Well, the first thing is remember that there's an N in environment because you don't really hear it, do you? It's E-N-V-I-R-O-N-M-E-N-T, environment. Environment. So let's look at some words connected to nature and the environment. What do we have, Reza?
Can you tell me a synonym for forest?
You mean a place where there are many trees?
Mm-hmm.
You could say wood, mm-hmm. madera, as an uncountable noun, W-O-O-D, wood.
And what's the material that this table we're using is made of?
Wood.
Aha, so it can be the material as well.
It can. And the same pronunciation as W-O-U-L-D, the modal verb would, exactly the same, wood. Another word connected to the environment is lake, lago in Spanish, lake. Are there any lakes in our area here in Valencia?
Yes, there's the... Oh, I nearly forgot, didn't I? How could I forget?
How could you forget?
La Albufera, where they grow the rice. It's the rice growing area of Spain, La Albufera. Well, I suppose lake is not quite right because it's a mixture of fresh water, like a lake, but also seawater. In fact, the Albufera is a lagoon.
Yeah.
Una laguna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's also an area of natural beauty. There's a lot of wildlife there. Wildlife, compound noun, W-I-L-D-L-I-F-E, wildlife.
Craig, can I teach you a word in English?
Go on.
That people in my town use all the time in Belfast, but I doubt if you've ever pronounced. L-O-U-G-H. Can you say that word?
I've never heard that. Is it Lough?
It's pronounced Loch.
A Loch, like the Scottish Loch.
Ah, well, Loch or Loch.
Loch is L-O-C-K in Scotland, isn't it?
Is
L-O-C-H.
L-O-C-H in Scotland.
L-O-C-H.
And in Ireland, it's L-O-U-G-H. You'll find it in an English dictionary, in a good one.
I didn't know that.
The Ari. If you look at a map of Ireland, any lake is called loch. It's not called lake. It's called loch. But it means exactly the same.
Now, river is quite a common word, rio. But not so common is a small river. What's a small river in English, Reza?
A stream.
S-T-R-E-A-M, a stream.
But hold on, Craig. Can't you stream things on internet?
You can. Streaming is where you get the data immediately transferred through your internet connection.
Another meaning of stream.
To stream a video, which is similar to the idea of a stream because a stream flows. Fluir is to flow, F-L-O-W. Water flows downhill, H-I-L-L. Colina is hill. And what's the adjective of hill?
Ad Y, hilly.
H-I-L-L-Y, hilly. Yes. Do you think Valencia is a hilly area?
Not at all. It's very flat. So, hilly. That's nothing to do with... Don't think of the Spanish word gilipuertas, by the way. There's no connection whatsoever.
Did you say gilipuertas?
Puertas is what I said.
Is that a polite way to say...
Something else.
Something else.
That we'd better not say because we want to stay on internet.
Okay.
So, hilly means de muchas colinas.
Mm-hmm. And higher than a hill is a mountain. Now, the pronunciation is different from the spelling. The spelling, M-O-U-N-T-A-I-N, but the first vowel sound is ow, like cow or now, so it's moun, moun, and T-A-I-N, tin, mountain, mm-hmm. mountain.
And the adjective?
Mountainous.
Would you say Spain is a mountainous country?
It's mountainous in the north, where the Pyrenees are, so yeah. The Basque Country is quite mountainous. It's hilly and mountainous, but not really this area.
Yeah, it happens to be the most mountainous country in Europe, apparently, Spain. Hard to believe if you live in Valencia, but Spain is the most mountainous country in Europe.
Apparently. And the climbing is very, very good, apparently. There are world-class climbs to be done in Catalonia.
Whereas I'm from Ireland, which is not at all mountainous. Ireland is, and please don't laugh, Ireland is very hilly. That's hilly with H. I'm not speaking Spanish. Ireland is very hilly, but not at all mountainous. We have lots of hills, which are not very high, but we don't really have many mountains, which are high.
And I'm from Essex, which is in southeast England, and it's also not very hilly. It's quite flat. In fact, it's as flat as a pancake. Gorge. G-O-R-G-E. What's that in Spanish?
Garganta.
Garganta.
Or if it's a very big one, a canyon, but only if it's a big gorge.
Mm-hmm. Like the Grand Canyon, for example. And obviously, in a gorge, you find a valley.
No, you don't.
What's the difference between a gorge? What's the difference between a gorge and a valley?
A gorge is very narrow. A valley isn't. A valley is more open space. A gorge is when you have two high sides quite near each other, and what's in the middle is the gorge, whereas a valley has plenty of space between the two sides.
So all of these features of the all of these natural features like streams, hills, rivers, lakes, etc., put them together and it makes up, composes the landscape, L-A-N-D-S-C-A-P-E. One thing that my students sometimes have problems with is describing like the vista. So you could say view, the view from your window, but if you're looking at countryside, then you'd speak about the landscape. Are there any other words that we could use to describe what you can see when you're outside? There's view. There's landscape, scenery.
Ah, that's a good word.
Scenery.
Scenery implies that there's something worth looking at, something you should look at.
Yeah, something pretty. Lovely scenery. But you'd speak about the view from your window, for example. It's a nice view.
Craig, what would you call, in one word... all the animals that you find in nature.
Animals, you mean?
Not the domesticated ones, but the ones you find naturally.
Not the pets that you have in your home.
Exactly.
The wild animals. Mm-hmm. Salvaje. The wild animals. That would be the wildlife. One word. W-I-L-D-L-I-F-E. The wildlife.
And you can also have wild plants and flowers as well, ones which grow in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Not domesticated.
However, if you take a piece of land and you start growing things on it, you have a farm. So you start farming the land. And the person who farms the land is called a farmer.
Have you ever worked on a farm, Craig?
I have. I've driven a tractor. I've grown cotton, tomatoes, sweet corn, potatoes, other stuff.
Was it hard work?
It was very hard work. Up at 4 o'clock in the morning, working sometimes till 10 o'clock at night. Very, very hard work at particular times of the year. In the winter, when there's nothing growing in the fields, things that are growing in the fields are called crops, C-R-O-P-S. So when there are no crops to collect, and the word for collecting crops is to harvest, H-A-R-V-E-S-T. So when we're not harvesting, when we're not irrigating or watering the crops in the winter, then it was a bit easier.
Did you say you actually worked in the fields?
Yes, including planting and watering, irrigating the crops, harvesting the crops.
Did you plant or sow seeds?
What does to sow mean?
To sow is sembrar, to put them in the ground, to plant or to sow seeds, semillas. Did you do that?
Yes, but obviously not by hand. We had machines to do it. So, sure. Yeah, but we did it at certain times of the year.
How did you prepare the land to sow the seeds?
There's a word that means to take the soil, S-O-I-L, or the earth, and turn it upside down so that the air gets under it. That's called to plow, P-L-O-U-G-H, plow.
So it sounds like when you were a farmer, you lived off the land.
Yep, we used to eat our own tomatoes, our own avocados, yeah.
You lived off the land.
We lived off the land.
Can you remind me, apart from avocados and tomatoes, what other crops did you grow?
Sweet corn.
Okay.
Wheat and cotton. The cotton we exported.
So you were a farmer. Would you call yourself in those days a country bumpkin?
It depends how you describe. Do you mean if I had a straw hat and I was chewing a piece of wheat?
Yeah, and drinking cider all day long and saying, "Oh, how are you?" No, that's what English country bumpkins do stereotypically, but it's not true. It's not true. What's a country bumpkin? What's the image of a, or how would you translate it or define it?
Someone who lives a rural life, who lives a slow life, living off the land, living in nature, maybe not watching too much television or being very materialistic. Probably someone who lives a very natural life on the land. Do you agree with that?
Yes, which sounds good, although it has a negative connotation as well. When you say country bumpkin, you think of someone who's not very sophisticated, not very cultured, maybe a nice person, but they wouldn't be able to tell you much about art or theatre, etc. What's the opposite of a country bumpkin?
Maybe someone who lives in the city and has the latest, very expensive clothes, drives a fast car, maybe a city slicker. S-L-I-C-K-E-R, a city slicker.
A city slicker because they're slick. Everything is slick. It's fast, it's quick, it's elegant, looks cool. So slick, city slicker.
Yeah.
So we are talking about the difference between city and country dwellers. Dweller is a person who dwells, which is a slightly old-fashioned word for live. However, the collocation city and country dweller are still used today. So, Craig, you have been a country dweller and you're now a city dweller.
I'm not a city slicker.
But you're not a city slicker, no, but you are a city dweller. Which do you prefer, life as a city or country dweller?
I prefer both for different reasons. I like the peace and quiet, the scenery of the countryside, the slow pace of life, and being outside. I really enjoyed seeing the sunsets and the sunrises. But I love the city. I like the action of the city, the availability of facilities, and I like both for different reasons. But I think as you get older, city life is more comfortable, right? Because you're close to hospitals and doctors, yeah, and you can access things like the cinema, the shops, restaurants.
What do you do in the countryside when you go there? I mean, do you go trekking, for example?
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally, not so much here in Valencia, but when I travel, I like to go trekking. I like walking in the countryside and seeing the scenery. But I'm not a regular trekker. What about you? You went recently.
I wouldn't say I went trekking. No, I went for a long walk. I went for a long walk in the countryside.
A very long walk. How many kilometers did you walk for?
Just under 20 kilometers. If any listeners know about it, I went to the Hermitage of St. Mary Magdalene of Castellón. Or if you prefer, I did El Camí a la Ermita de Santa María de la Magdalena de Castellón de la Plana.
That's easy for you to say. Was it a nice scenic trip? Did you see good scenery on
beautiful,
the way?
Beautiful. Yeah, as you can imagine, Castellón de la Plana is very flat. It's called Castellón of the Flat.
No hills, no hills and mountains and rock climbing then.
Not till you get to the Hermitage, the Ermita, and then there's a hill.
Did you have good weather?
Beautiful weather.
So you quite like going into the countryside, but would you prefer to live in the city permanently or in the countryside? Would you prefer to be a country dweller?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't quite decide. I wouldn't say no to living in the countryside, but I wouldn't like to live in a very remote, very isolated place. I'd like to live near a few other people. Mm-hmm. That might be nice.
Yeah, me too.
So I do like rural areas, but not extremely isolated areas.
Of course, one advantage of living in the countryside or dwelling in the countryside is that there's little or no pollution.
Right.
Polluted cities are very common. Be careful of pollution because it could be a false friend. In Spanish, it's contaminación. Don't translate it to contamination. It's pollution, double L.
So what does contamination mean then if it doesn't mean pollution?
It means pollution, but not necessarily in the air. Would you agree with that?
Right.
If the air is contaminated, maybe there's a virus and you become a zombie.
Right. Right. So it's to do with health or hygiene or something like that.
After a nuclear attack, the air is contaminated with radioactive waste, radioactivity. Let me ask you something, Reza. Do you recycle at home?
I do. I recycle glass, plastic, tins, paper and cardboard. Unfortunately, I don't recycle organic material because there aren't facilities nearby for me to do it. What about you?
I try to, yeah. I separate my rubbish and things that are recyclable, like glass, paper, plastic. I separate and I put in the rubbish bins outside the flat. It's important, I think.
To be eco-friendly.
To be eco-friendly, to be green. Do you say that in Spanish, to be green, verde?
Yes.
Green person is eco-friendly.
Environmentally friendly, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm fairly green, but I could be greener.
Yeah. Everyone should go green, shouldn't they? There's no excuse for people not to recycle these days.
Absolutely. I saw an interesting documentary yesterday about a man who built a house on plastic bottles. He collected plastic bottles somewhere in the Caribbean, I think he was, and he put them in sacks and made rafts floating on the sea and then put wood on top of recycled wood on top of these bottles and built a house, built his own island out of recyclable things. It was amazing. We'd like to take a few minutes to tell you about our sponsor, iTalki. iTalki is a website where you can find a professional native English teacher to improve your English one-to-one using Skype. You choose the time and you choose the teacher. Razor and I have both had lessons with iTalki teachers and we've been very happy with the service. I asked Daniel, who works at the iTalki offices in Shanghai, China, what's the best thing and what's the worst thing about working there? Here's Daniel.
The best thing about my job is that everyone here is very, very friendly. I was actually surprised by how friendly they were when I got here. The worst, I would have to say, is the toilets, because the water in the taps is incredibly cold, and after I go, I always spend about 2 or 3 minutes sort of warming up my hands before I'm able to type at all.
iTalki. Cold water, warm hearts. Find your very own personal warm-hearted teacher and get a free lesson at inglespodcast.com/italki. Reza and I would like to thank Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Let's get back to the countryside and farming. Craig, what does the word pest mean to you?
A pest in farming, and that's one job I had when I was a farmer, is looking for things that would eat the crops, like insects, for example. So I used to look at the leaves of the plants and try to find the negative insects that would damage the crops. And if necessary, you'd have to spray to kill the pests. But a pest can be a person. If somebody annoys you, if someone bothers you, you say, go away, you pest.
Yeah, but there's no need to kill him.
But someone who disturbs you, who bothers you, is also a pest.
And what did you use to kill these pests in the countryside?
We used chemicals called pesticides or insecticides that we sprayed on the crops. But before we did that, the guy I worked with, he tried to introduce natural enemies of the pests. So, for example, a spider will eat a fly, or a fly will eat a mosquito. So if you're lucky, the natural enemies will solve the problem for you. But sometimes it doesn't work. You have to spray to save the crop.
Mm-hmm. So your friend that you mentioned, by releasing some insects to kill insects, he tried to make it sustainable.
Yes.
We often talk about sustainable farming. That means it can be sustained, a system that can go on indefinitely, whereas using more and more and more pesticides, having more and more and more pollution, consuming more and more and more plastic is not sustainable. We cannot sustain it. We can't go on like that forever.
So if something's not sustainable, you can't keep doing it. I remember that we used to grow some crops that took nitrogen and other chemicals from the soil, from the earth. So we had to grow different crops or put back chemicals into the soil. Otherwise, it's not sustainable to keep growing the same thing. Tomatoes was an example. Something with tomatoes that took nitrogen from the soil.
Right. So tomatoes were one of your produce.
Yes.
Yeah, the word produce, or let's spell it P-R-O-D-U-C-E, that can be a noun. Tomatoes are a produce of the land. Or it can be a verb, to produce, with different pronunciation. So Craig produced tomatoes. Tomatoes were one of the produce that Craig produced.
So the stress changes. The verb has the stress on the second syllable, produce, and the noun on the first syllable, produce.
And the word produce is only generally used for crops and things that are produced in the countryside. For example, if you buy the latest Apple iPhone, that is not a produce. It's a product.
A product.
So produce is generally things that you eat that are grown.
Mm-hmm. And if you grow things organically with no pesticides, with no insecticides, then it's organic. So it's organic farming. Or organic food.
Craig, you mentioned earlier, an area of outstanding beauty, did you say earlier, or something like that? You were talking about nature conservation.
Yes, conserving nature as it is.
Yes.
And not ruining it by construction.
Yeah, we mentioned the L'Albufera, which of course is a protected area. It's a nature reserve. It has been reserved. In other words, in theory, although this is the Comunidad Valenciana, so you never know, but in theory, no one can build there. No one can build there. In theory, let's see in a couple of years if that's still the case.
But there's also a law to say that you cannot build within so many meters of the sea. But that is a law that depends more on the whim or the feeling of the politician than the actual law that's written in the Constitution, unfortunately.
Maybe let's leave politics. We're getting into politics and go back to farming. Craig, something which is of extreme importance to me, and some people think I'm crazy for this, is GM farming. What does GM stand for?
Is it genetically modified?
It is indeed. GM farming is something that I'm really interested in, or GM produce and food. What are your thoughts on GM?
I don't know, to be honest. It's not something I've thought about a lot. It sounds like it's something we shouldn't be doing.
Does it sound bad? Genetic modification? Does it frighten you to hear those words?
It doesn't frighten me to hear those words. I'm not a person who buys fruit and vegetables because of how attractive they look. I'm a person who would rather go for the taste of something. So if a banana or a tomato is a bit small, it's not a perfect shape. It doesn't bother me as long as it tastes good. What I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, genetically modified food is supposed to be perfect, isn't it? But does it have less taste?
It's supposed to be perfect, and many people think it has less taste, but other people argue that it's perfectly fine. But I think most people find that it hasn't got much character. It tastes a bit bland, soso.
Soso, yeah.
So it's all edible, you can eat it, and the production is good, you always get a good harvest, but it's just not that exciting to eat. It doesn't taste that great.
Do you buy GM produce?
I would avoid it like the plague. It's something I feel very strongly about. But I probably do buy it without knowing it because we're eating it and we're not really being properly informed.
But legally, don't they have to say if it's GM or not?
Legally, they do. But we happen to be recording right now in the country with the greatest GM production of produce in Europe.
Have you
ever seen it written on a label?
I didn't know that. No, but I don't look for it. That's the thing. I don't tend to look closely at the labels. I should do.
They don't write it. You don't waste your time by looking. They just don't write it. I've never seen it written. For example, Spanish sweet corn, the majority is GM. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen it written on one single tin. What I have seen written is non-GM product. That you sometimes see when they tell you, okay, this is not GM. It's non-GM. But they're not going to tell you when it is GM, so, even though they're supposed to by law.
So that suggests that the defalto is GM, and they tell you when it's not.
Which is not, so you assume, not the law, but that's what they do.
So you assume that it's genetically modified unless it says otherwise.
Is that a general you or a me you?
Generally speaking.
That's how I think. But the law says, the European directive says, that if it doesn't say it's GM, it's not GM. However, I've never seen a Spanish label that said GM on it. And I know that the vast majority of corn production is GM. In other words, I'm saying that the producers might not be telling the whole truth. That's what I'm saying. And they might not be following the law. That's what I'm saying.
And this problem with GM food, non-GM food, is it more common in supermarket chains or in open markets, or is it everywhere now?
Everywhere. But I think it's more common in supermarket because GM production lowers costs, so it's cheaper for them to buy.
So do you suggest buying food in natural, organic shops?
If you can afford it, yes.
It's more expensive, isn't it?
But of course, it's going to be more expensive. That's any problem. I recommend demanding that producers follow the European laws and label their food correctly. I'm saying give us the choice to choose if we want GM or not, but they don't tell us when we're eating it. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the expression, the birds and the bees. If I asked you to tell me about the birds and the bees, what would you
I would say that I would much rather let the birds and the bees do their work than trust GM production. The birds and the bees means that nature takes its course. Let nature take its course. The birds and the bees, what happens? The birds or the bees, they pick up the pollen on their bodies and they fly to other plants.
Is pollen the same word in Spanish?
Yes.
Okay.
They pick up the pollen on their bodies and they deposit it unknowingly. They don't know they're doing it in another plant. And that's how pollination occurs. Mother Nature lets it happen naturally.
So Mother Nature takes its course.
Mother Nature takes its course. The birds and the bees ensure reproduction. So in colloquial English, we often use the expression the birds and the bees to refer to sexual reproduction. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of euphemism.
Yeah, and sometimes when people get to a certain age, maybe teenagers, it's common for the mother or the father to talk about the birds and the bees and educate their children about sex, which is something my parents never did. I had to learn from my friends. My dad never sat me down and said, Craig, I'm going to tell you about the birds and the bees.
Mine neither.
I had to learn by myself.
So, Craig, I've already asked you about whether you prefer to live in the countryside or the city, and you said that both have advantages, although as you get older, the city's more comfortable. But you like the countryside. The problem is the countryside has beautiful natural resources. They look good, but we need to exploit those natural resources. Do you think we should worry so much about environmental protection at the cost of not using, not exploiting these natural resources? For example, if a mountainside is full of an important mineral, shouldn't we dig out this mineral and use it to make things? Although it means we have to blow up the mountainside. What do you think about that?
I think that the countryside should be protected as much as possible. I think the problem is that we tend to be more aware now of protecting our environment in Europe, but what we do very hypocritically is we go to Africa to get our silicon for the chips that go in the mobile phones, and we damage other countries to get the minerals cheaply and without damaging our environment. So it's not, without getting too political, I don't agree with it, and I think we should protect the environment as much as possible.
All over the world, not just in Europe.
It's a beautiful world. We have to keep it beautiful.
How in tune with nature are you? Do you appreciate nature?
I do, yes. I do, and I think nature's all around us. We can go out now, even though we live in the city, and we can appreciate the trees, the birds, we can appreciate animals we see in the street.
Do you do that? Do you think about what flowers are in season or what fruit is in season? That means the temporada. Do you think, oh, well, I'm not going to buy strawberries now in March because strawberries don't come until June, or do you just buy them anyway?
I buy them anyway because now they're shipped from all over the world. And
that's a bit polluting, isn't it? All that fuel to fly them over here. Couldn't you just wait to June and buy the Spanish ones?
But typically you end up buying, and what's happening now, and I don't understand economics, but it seems to me that what's grown locally or fished or produced locally gets exported, and we buy it from other countries because for some reason it's cheaper. And that happened when I was farming. We used to grow avocados, sell them to another farm, and then buy avocados from a different farm. And because of the prices and economics, it was cheaper. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But maybe unless you know somebody in Valencia who's collecting oranges, maybe you're eating oranges from another country.
Yeah.
Well, and exporting Valencian oranges.
Yeah. Lucky we do. Javier, un abrazo. A big hug for Javier.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for your oranges.
Javier's oranges and his honey.
And his honey. Delicious, Javier.
Thank you.
So we're lucky we have important contacts in Valencia.
Yep.
Oranges, honey, olive oil. We've got it all.
Tenemos enchufes.
Yeah. I love the idea of eating really good quality produce, which is local, and so hasn't used up a lot of fuel to get to my table. I like that. For me, it's crazy that in Spanish supermarkets, you can buy garlic from China. It says on the label, from China. Spain's full of garlic. Why should they import from China? That's the global economy for you. There's a lot of problems with it. But we should probably leave that for another episode because it's a whole new area, isn't it?
Speaking about the birds and the bees, do you think the bees are important to us?
Oh, Craig. You've got me onto a hobby horse. A hobby horse is something that I'm obsessed about. Well, you know the famous Austrian physicist Albert Einstein is famously supposed to have claimed that if bees disappeared off the face of the earth, the human race would consequently also disappear within 4 years.
Really?
That's what he said.
But just because of cross-pollination? Because they pollinate flowers?
Yep. And crops and plants.
But surely if they disappeared, we're clever enough to find a way of automatically pollinating.
We've already found a way by hand. In China, manual pollination already exists because there's a shortage of bees. So people have to, by hand, take part of one plant, the male or female plant, and transfer it to the opposite sex to ensure pollination. The work which before bees used to do for free, and they were perfectly happy to do it, but now we have to pay people to spend the time pollinating by hand. Is that not an absurd waste of human resources? Absurd. When bees did it for free. Now, in China, they're finding it difficult. Do you know how many people live in China? And they haven't got enough people to do it. Do you think the whole world's going to be able to spend time manually pollinating plants?
Well, there's over 20% unemployment in Spain, so, you know, we can lend a hand.
Quite literally. I'm not joking when I say that bees are more important to the survival of the human race than humans. I'm seriously not joking.
No, I've heard that before.
I believe what Einstein said. I don't know about 4 years. That might be an exaggeration, but certainly within a few decades, if all bees and similar insects disappear, I'm fairly sure we will die out. We will become extinct because pollination, by other means is simply not practical. It can't be done.
It really is to be or not to be, isn't it?
Exactly. Would you agree with all that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, critical. Definitely critical.
And bee numbers are about half what they used to be 20 or 30 years ago.
Half what they used to be.
Yeah. In a similar line of thinking, I believe that the only creatures on this planet that commit senseless acts which destroy nature and the environment are humans. We are our own worst enemy. We don't need to fear any animal or any weather condition too much. We only really need to fear ourselves. I wonder what our listeners think about that. I'd be interested to hear your comments that humans are their own worst enemies.
Me too. So if you have an opinion on what we've discussed, please send us an email to me, Craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or me, Reza@belfastreza@gmail.com.
And don't forget, we're still looking for your comments and recordings to help us put together our 100th episode, which is coming up very soon. So please send us your wins, your positive experiences with English, and begin with how English has helped you. English has helped you because of what? Because you've got a better promotion, a better job, you've travelled, you've met people, made friends. Tell us how English has benefited you over the years. You can send us a voice message, which you can leave at speakpipe.com/Inglespodcast. And on next week's episode, we'll be speaking about veterinary vocabulary and expressions with pets. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And bye-bye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.